roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. It's going to be a fun show here as we recap. The three fight cards from this past week, we went back to back to back Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday starting off with PFL 2021 week three. I hate that we have to call it that way, but that's the way it is. Friday night we had Bellator 258. See how easy that is? And then Saturday we had UFC on ESPN 24. They don't make it easy either, but I've kind of gotten used to them. But there you have it. It was three fight cards, like pig and poop, man, if you're an MMA fan. Three of the biggest promotions on back-to-back nights. We'll go over all that from top to bottom. Plus, we got two guests. Neil Magny is going to be our first guest. He'll join us at 9:20 a.m. Pacific time. That's 12:20 p.m. Eastern time. We're live right now, like we are every Monday and Thursday on Sportscaster. And then our second guest will be Lorenz Larkin, 9:40 a.m. Pacific time, 12:40 p.m. Eastern time. So two guests, three cards to cover, and of course, if we have time, we'll sprinkle in some of the latest news nuggets as well. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. We'll be right back to get the show started. Because right as I was giving the intro, you could hear my email noise, which, by the way, I think I've heard from people either on social media or on iTunes reviews. And they always pin it to me. It could be Goz, you know, but
it's not me.
Damn George always has his email alerts or something like that. And guess what? It happened during the spinning back leak as well. I think that's why Goz changed that face. It did. It happened during the first question, and you could see my arm kind of like, I'm going to make it more obvious now, but I kind of did this, you know, like, but I did it real subtly. I just kind of moved it, and then I go in there, and I do the command tab, find the email, and then hit Q.
Did it happen during your question? Because if it was during your question, we would hear it, but if it was during one of ours, we wouldn't.
It was during John's intro of the when we were first starting spinning back, like it was during the intro. He said it. It's like nails on a chalkboard. Trust me, I hate it too, but the thing is to get into StreamYard, which is the software that we use, you have to request a code via email. And then when you get it, you copy paste and you go right back to the software and you forget to close the other deal. But anyway, you're here to listen to some mixed martial arts. So let's get started. I hope you all had a nice weekend, and I hope you all had a great Mother's Day with all of the mothers in your circles, in your families, friends, whoever you spent it with. Okay, Friday night. It was important because every fight card at PFL is important. If you don't make it to the final four, you don't get in the playoffs. And if you don't get in the playoffs, you can't compete for $1 million. Trust me, all these fighters have already, you know, when they're working out their budgets with their wives or significant others or just by themselves, they're looking at, okay, so I'm going to fight once in April, once in June. We got the playoffs. And then December, I'm going to make this plus $1 million divided by four. You know what I mean? They're all thinking that. So when you don't make it, it is cold, harsh reality. And some people are in some spots. But Magomed Umulatov defeated Kyron Bowen. Taylor Guardiato defeated Helena Kolasek. Oh, and by the way, if I haven't told you, it was men's heavyweight and women's lightweight that were on display on Thursday night at PFL 2021 Week 3. Dennis Goldsoff defeated Mo Derice. Jenna Fabian defeated Laura Sanchez. Caitlin Young defeated Cindy Dandua. B. Capazula defeated Antti Delija. Larissa Pacheco defeated Julia Pajic. Brendan Sales defeated Mohamed Usman. Kayla Harrison defeated Mariana Moraes. and Henan Fajeda defeated Fabricio Werdum. That's right. He defeated Fabricio Werdum, albeit there was some controversy. So before we get to that, goes really quick. Any thoughts on Sales versus Usman and Harrison versus Mariana Moraes before we get to that fight?
Well, the Usman one was surprising, but it wasn't that surprising because he's still kind of early in his career, as where, Kayla Harrison. I feel bad because I think a lot of people think, why are they giving her these tomato cans or whatever? But they're not always like that. I just think Kayla's really good. I think she's a really good fighter, and I think time will prove that. But yeah, the Usman one caught me off guard a little bit, but not that much either.
Yeah, I think with Usman, his name carries a lot of stock value, you know? And he's only lost one time. If you remember, his brother only lost one time. I think it was even pretty tough. And then look at the run he's been on. What is he on, 15 straight or something like that in the UFC? So we've seen him with his brother cornering him. We've seen him compete before at Titan and now with the PFL. So I'm probably guilty of it as well. I look at it as an upset. But if you look at Sales, I mean, he only had the one loss as well. He's just starting off his career. But he was the one guy that got the win on Thursday night. So it's not over yet. I mean, Usman could obviously win his next fight, get a finish, make the playoffs, compete for $1 million. That's the fun thing about PFL in a way is you're not out until you're really out of the playoffs. The loss isn't the most horrible setback, but it's not like years before where eight people made it, and I think you could get people that easily lost their first fight or their second fight and then got in. This time it's going to be really, really tough. But regardless, Harrison, there's not much to add. She is just really, really looking better and better and better. She's a big star for the PFL. But now we get to the main event with Fajeda and Werdum. And in that fight, there was some controversy, and I'll tell you why. It was missed, at least upon watching it live, a tap that Fabricio Werdum started talking about when they put the camera on him, when they panned to him. You know, he was the losing fighter. He was mentioning a tap. And then when we saw the replays, well, there was a version of the tap. Now, look, if you look at the rule book, I think it says three taps means I submit or whatever. But I don't think we have to necessarily see the tap. I think once you see the tapping motion that we're all pretty familiar with, a referee can stop the fight. In watching it on slow motion, I saw what Fabricio was talking about. There was a clear tapping motion because of the submission that he was in. But what I saw was a tap and a half. Like, there was a tap and then the hand looking like it was touching Fabricio. So it didn't come back up, you know, because I would like to see something more like this rather than this. So we saw one of these and then that, and then it stopped. Mm-hmm. A lot of fighters will argue sometimes I'm reaching for a limb or the head or something, maybe to frame or pull back or just get to familiar with where they're at, because when you're taught certain things, you're taught, you know, certain defenses. What you want to do is you want to reach back as far as you can, wedge yourself between this body part, whatever. And so if you give that benefit of the doubt, perhaps he was doing that. Who knows? I would have had no argument with the referee stopping it and going, you tapped. Fabricio is the winner, you know, and even if I missed it live. When they showed me that, I would have said, oh, yeah, you know, I think I've accepted that as a tap along the way. But at the same time, I'm so on the fence with it that whether Peterson missed it, because I think it was no-nonsense Peterson, whether he missed it at the time or just didn't think it was a tap, I'm also kind of okay with that. And then at the end of the day, they say you fight until the referee stops the fight. And so Fabricio should have continued fighting, because one thing Fabricio did add when he was discussing this was, I felt a tap, so I let it go. And when we watched it in slow motion, he didn't let it go. So the tap that he argued was there, if we said, yeah, we all see it, what we can't give him is the part where he lets go. I didn't see him let go, meaning the fight still went on. And so the other guy got out of it because the referee didn't see it. And so in that regard, he lost the fight. Now, does it mean it's all over for Werdum? No. Werdum has one more fight, and if you get the win, especially with the finish, especially with the first round finish, and you get 6 points, there shouldn't be a problem. We'll see how the PFL restructures their next round. It could be that, two of the top collide, or Maybe they take top versus bottom. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. You definitely don't want to see rematches for no reason. But how was your interpretation of that fight, Ghost?
I didn't even see that tap, to be honest, until they brought it up. But Fabricio Werdum isn't a guy who's like 10-2, you know, or 14-3. He's had a lot of fights, and not just in his fights, but he should probably take the experience of things that he's seen happen around him. And these type of things have happened to a lot of fighters in their career. So it shouldn't shock him. He's got to just wait till the referee comes and separates them. That being said, the tap, it was a little confusing for me. So I don't know how a referee would be expected to make that judgment right then and there. It just, yeah, kind of looked like a tap, but it also kind of didn't. It could have been him reaching. So I don't know. It just wasn't definitive. So in watching it, I would say that. Now, Fabricio is basically, he's not watching the tap. He's feeling it. And what he felt, I don't feel like that was enough for him to let go at all. So it was a very confusing situation for me. Well, luckily with PFL, like you said, it's not all over for Fabricio. He could turn things around and be right back where he needs to be. But yeah, that was another upset of many upsets with PFL.
It is. And I'll tell you what, now we all know who Fajita is. It's too bad that it comes at the cost of Werdum. But that's my argument for why the upsets are good. You know, we were singing Clay Collard's praises a couple weeks ago. Bubba Jenkins is being talked about. Marcin Held, who defeated Nathan Schultz, you know, he's being talked about. Though I think he came in with a lot more stock because we've seen him a lot in the UFC. Heck, I think we've seen him in Bellator as well. And this is no disrespect to Jenkins, who we've also seen compete for many years. He's a former national Division I wrestling champion as well. But I'm talking about usually most people, when they refer to athletes that they've seen, it's because they've seen them compete in the UFC. But regardless, they got, the, you know, those fighters get put over, I guess, in a way. And but at the same time, you invest a lot in the free agents. You know, if we leave Schulte and Palmer aside, they that's kind of the homegrown talent. But with Pettis and Werdum, you know, I think PFL would have, I think of the two, they would prefer to see them continue to win and maybe make it to a final or whatever, because those guys get paid to draw in fans. So I don't know, that would be a better question for PFL. I saw an article with Ray Sefo saying that this is definitely a good thing too. And I understand exactly where he's coming from.
Yeah. With heavyweights, I just feel like heavyweights sting more, you know, those are the baddest men on the planet, the biggest name. So I think it stung a little bit, to be honest, but the controversy helps. That's the thing, is controversy can sell as well. So that can be a good thing for PFL. And all these upsets combined with a little controversy, all it does is just make you feel like you can't miss a show.
What a big guy that guy was, Fajita, too, man. Well put together, yeah. All 6'8" of them. And, you know, when Kenny Florian was on the show Thursday talking to us, he said, you know, Werdum did train for somebody that was tall before. He trained for Travis
Brown,
yeah, Ronda Rousey's husband. And as he was saying it, I kind of giggled to myself because I remember that fight starting out with Fabricio Werdum. If I'm not mistaken, he kind of ran over and did like a kung fu kick, you know, and he caught Brown. And as he was saying that, I was thinking of it, but I didn't get the chance to crack the joke or say anything to you guys, to you and Kenny, when that happened. And sure enough, when that fight started, they both ran at each other and tried to kick each other. So Werdum's just – I've always really gotten to like Werdum and his style because he's so entertaining with his personality. Only one time do I recall going, that fight sucked, and it was the one with Alistair Overeem. I think it was either a quarterfinal or a semifinal in the Grand Prix, and it was just horrific. But other than that, I'm pretty sure I've enjoyed every Fabricio Werdum fight I've ever seen, especially the week leading up. Him and his team are always jovial in you know, laughter. But you can see homeboy has his, you know, his quirky personality, but he's a tough SOB. Remember he threw the boomerang at Colby. He almost got into it with Tony Ferguson, you know, at the media luncheon. So you can tell there's that side of him too. Like, don't mess with me.
Do you, I mean, I know that since then, like Masvidal with the flying knee was relatively quick. But really, if you go back, I don't know that anybody's thrown a better kick to start a fight off than Pat Smith, right? Back at like UFC 6 or some shit like that.
Rudyard Moncayo?
Right? That's still kind of like the GOAT of starting off a fight with a kick.
Yeah, because if we define it as a kick and define Masvidal with a knee, then for sure. But if you say lower body strike, maybe, then there might be a lot of argument for Masvidal because he ended it, you know, over a guy that hadn't lost. Remember, with the thing with Ben Askren is he hadn't lost. He was a former two promotion champion, a former NC2A wrestling champion. He came with a lot of accolades, former Olympian. So this guy hung the first competitive L on him in a long time. You'd have to go back to the Olympics. And but kick-wise, that one definitely is up there to start a fight. The what you said, Pat Smith and Rudyard Moncayo. Rudy Moncayo was his name. And Werdum against Brown was epic too.
It was pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so PFL, that was their third week here in April. And congrats to them. I thought they looked great on ESPN. And so now they take, I think, a six-week hiatus, and they come back with another set of fights back in Atlantic City in June. So once we get a chance to see the matchups, we'll see what each fighter has to do so that they can continue and be a part of the final foursome there that makes the playoffs. Remember, they're not going to have two fights in one night. They're only going to do semifinals and then finals. So there'll be one round of playoffs and then their finals. Okay, Bellator 258 on Showtime the very next day had a lot of talent from top to bottom. Unfortunately, only some of it was seen on Showtime. But things started off with Eric Perez, Goyito getting a win over Blaine Shutt. These are the prelims. Johnny Soto defeated Weber Almeida. Johnny Campbell defeated Henry Corrales. We had Henry Corrales on, and he was really amped and ready to go, but he came out on the losing end here. He got submitted. Johnny Eblen defeated Daniel Madrid. Patchy Mix, a.k.a. Patrick Mix, he defeated Albert Morales. Lorenz Larkin defeated Rafael Carvalho, former middleweight champion there. These guys fought at 185. Larkin immediately said, I'm going back down to welterweight. We'll ask him about it one more time when he joins us here in about 25 minutes. Neil Magny joining us in about five. Rafion Stotts defeated Josh Hill. Michael Page broke Derek Anderson's nose and ended his night. Vicious, vicious kick. I mean, Michael Page is really, really a dangerous fighter. The cracked skulls, the broken noses. I know he doesn't engage as much as people would like, but when he does, boy, that guy's deadly. Peter Queeley defeated Patricky Pitbull. Doctor Stoppage there. I don't know if you peeked at their social media, but they have been going at it. Anthony Johnson defeated Jose Augusto Azevedo. Exciting fight there. Sergio Pettis defeated Juan Archuleta. Goes, what did you hear? What did you want to talk about? Because there was a lot that went on at Bellator 258.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about MVP. Like, come on, man. People know who this kid is. Like, even if you're not tuning in to watch his fights, you're definitely seeing the ramifications of what he does in there, right? If you go back and you look at Cyborg and what he did to his head, and now the crushed nose, like literally a crushed nose. He's a human highlight reel. Get him a proper opponent. Enough is enough already. And let's just throw him to the – I mean, I know he's had decent matchups, but let's just make that a consistent thing. Like, he's just a guy now that has arrived. Give him another big name because the years are going to start to go by, right? I mean, like, after a while, it's been how long has it been since the daily matchup? Lima, like, I want to see more of them. I want to see only quality opponents. I think he's tremendous. And then seeing Anthony Johnson back is just so cool. You know, that guy has I still feel like he has a lot of potential to be an even better mixed martial artist. But just the raw talent that he has is enough for most guys to be successful in mixed martial arts. So it's fun. And the main event was pretty good, man. Like, the pinpoint striking from Sergio Pettis, I think that's what won him the fight.
Yeah. So going back to what you said, the Page fight versus Daly was in 2019. In fact, his record, I believe, is 21-1. Let me see. I got it right here. 20 and 1 now, I believe. And if you think about it, that's just an excellent record for starters. But his back-to-back fights of the Daily win and the Lima loss were back-to-back. Now, I know you are all listening going, well, he won. No, he did. But remember his – I wouldn't say his stock dropped, but that fight didn't live up to the hype. There you go. Versus Daly. So even though he won, we were like, ah, boo to both of you, right? And then he loses to Lima. But to toss out that six-month, nine-month run, and Page has been pretty brilliant at times. There's times where when that style goes to 15 minutes, it's not for everybody's palate, you know. But make no mistake. This fight was brilliant, and even though, again, it slowed down at times, he was doing what he needed to do to set things up. And how about the embrace that they had at the end and the respect that they had at the end? You know, both guys talked up a little bit of a game, but I think both of them just came to the realization, wow, like, that was a good fight. You broke my nose, but respect, you know, because I would have done it to you if you didn't do it to me, or – you know what I mean? And I kind of really, really enjoyed that. Sometimes I prefer for them to just cool off and do whatever. But in this case, bravo to Derek Anderson and Michael Page. And we'll talk more about Bellator 258 in just a sec. Joining us now is going to be Neil Magny, UFC welterweight, who got a win over Jeff Neal. We'll sort it out, and we'll be right back with Neil Magny. All right, one of the big winners on Saturday night's card, UFC on ESPN 24, was Neil Magny as he defeated Jeff Neal. Welcome, Neil, to MMA Junkie Radio. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Congrats, man. That was a great win over a great fighter. And I just love that you dug so deep to win, you know, some of these rounds that were kind of close. And, you know, I think a lot of people had already started saying, could Neil be kind of like on the tail end, like kind of like on the decline or whatever? And you're here to show people that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely not the case. I mean, I definitely feel like I'm just starting to like blossom into like the full potential of the fighter I can be at this point. I have a great team around me, and we're making strides every day in the gym. So I feel like this is definitely beginning a new era for me.
Yeah, I mean, look at the names that you've put away in the past, you know, like Lombard, Gastelum, Hendricks, former champ there. And so you did go through that phase where then you picked up a few losses. But I'll tell you, man, I really have a lot of love for guys like Robbie Lawler, Michael Bisping, that kind of did that, you know, that a little bit of an up and down ride. But then towards the latter part of their career, they still had what was honestly a true final run. And I'm not saying this is your final run, but this is a run that you can build off of, you know, that could lead to something. And I think sometimes MMA fans and media can be fickle, and you know, somebody experiences a couple losses and we already want to put you on a decline, when in reality, all the SOBs that you get in there with are really, really tough, man. That welterweight division is stacked.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the last guy that I lost to being positive, he's been able to do great things. Before that, the last guy I lost was RDA. He went on to fight for a title shortly after beating me. So it's not like I'm losing to the guys that aren't in the top five or aren't being title contenders or champions themselves. So it definitely makes you feel a little bit better in the sense that I'm like knowing that I'm in there with the best of the world kind of thing. But at the end of the day, I'm ready to make that transition. I'm ready to go from being a top contender, being a guy that's actually fighting for a title, and becomes a world champion at this point in my career. I know I have the skill sets to do it. Just a matter of me being consistent at this point and put a string and a couple of wins together again.
Now, Jeff Neal's got some really nice boxing, some really nice hands, and some of those punches actually hurt you as well. How hurt were you, and where would you rank Jeff Neal to amongst some of these other hard hitters that I mentioned before, some that went your way and some that didn't? And what was that experience like, having fought so many of those guys and then just knowing exactly what you can take and your level of comfort, you know, being in the pocket with someone like you?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff is definitely a heavy hitter, dude. Like, it was kind of funny because after our fight, his coach was kind of looking at me backstage, and he's, like, looking at my face, and he's just, like, he's literally sitting there amazed, like, holy hell, dude, how did you take those shots? Like, he threw everything at you, and you're somehow still standing. So his coach, like, looking at my face, trying to, like understand, like, how is it possible that you didn't fall with those shots? And, like, I can only attribute it to the smaller cage. Like, literally a few shots, he knocked me back. And because I didn't have that many steps behind me before I fell, I kind of fell into the cage and caught my balance. But If that cage was any bigger and I had to take a step or two more to get there, I probably would have fell flat on my back and he would have followed with more damage. But, like, he definitely hits like a freaking truck.
That's an interesting take. I've never thought about it that way. We bring up the size of the cage all the time, but not in terms of somebody taking a shot and maybe having more real estate to stumble and tumble. But, wow. Okay. Yeah, a lot of respect towards your opponent. That's awesome. You've had now a few days to decompress and think about what's next. But before we ask you what's next, how's your health and when would you like to fight before we even talk about any names?
So health is pretty good. I mean, the Jeff Neal fight was an interesting training camp. I went to that fight. Did deal with some injuries that kind of kept me from training to my full potential in training camp. And a lot of those things showed in that fight. Being at the point I'm in my career now and what I'm trying to get accomplished in the next couple of years, rest and recovery is going to be just as important as me being active. So taking about the next 3 to 4 weeks or so to kind of rest those injuries, heal those injuries up and get back to a solid training camp with my ideal game plan as far as like when my next fight's going to be. So looking at like an August timeframe, which would allow me to do that, would be perfect. I mean, I can heal these injuries. I can get some solid things, training sessions underneath me to kind of build off of things I did wrong in this fight, trying to progress from there. So August would be an ideal time frame for me to get back in there.
You mentioned the things you want to accomplish still. And it sounded plural to me. Now, I imagine one of them is always win a world title. But is there other stuff that you want to accomplish in your career?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, winning the world title is definitely the cherry on top of my career. But when it comes to it and having a family, I have to provide for them long after this the sport's over with. So being able to set up things that are going to be around long after I'm done fighting is my goal as well. So not only am I chasing that title, I'm definitely making sure I'm securing certain things outside the cage to allow my family to live well long after I'm done fighting.
Neil, when you go through the fight in your head and you think about what you went through in that fight, is there a particular moment that you can point to that you could say you were the most proudest about because you either made an adjustment or saw something, just something that made you really proud about that performance?
The biggest thing is just being able to like stay in the fight and not necessarily give up. I mean, like I was saying earlier, he cracked me with some pretty big shots. I mean, it wasn't by like any means am I exaggerating by how heavy hard he hit me. Those shots are definitely heavy. And it's just like still kind of staying true and realizing like, hey, you know what? I'm still in the fight. It's not over yet. I can still find a way to win. And then to go through all that and pull out the win. I mean, I'm proud of that. I mean, most guys would have folded after those first couple shots that he took from Jeff Neal, but I was able to take those shots, keep going and land some big shots of my own.
Neil, early on in a fighter's career, a matchmaker will come to the manager, to the fighter, and say, this is who we're thinking. These are some names. But as your career kind of progresses, fighters get to the level where they're sending that email. This is who I want. This is my wish list. You kind of told us August. Is there a particular place you would like to throw down? The world is starting to open up a little bit. And are there names out there that kind of a wish list that Neil Magny's had?
So ideally, if it was a perfect world scenario, I'd be fighting a guy like Vicente Luque. Vicente Luque is on a impressive win streak right now. He's ranked in the top 10. So that's definitely a guy that moves my career forward as far as getting closer to that top five and closer to a title shot. But at the end of the day, this is also an entertainment sport as well. And a guy like Khamzat Chimaev has been running his mouth a lot. And he's definitely a guy that kind of needs to get in there and get a fight. So if I'm unable to get a fight against a top-ranked opponent, I'm definitely not opposed to finding a guy like Khamzat Chimaev in August.
Man, Neil, much respect, dude. You're a gangster. Seriously, I think if you throw in tough, your next fight will be number 30. I know you're over 25. And sometimes I feel like it's been a quiet 25. And I think us media need to put a little bit more shine on what you've done, how long you've done it, who you've been in there with. But seriously, much respect from our end. And Goz is right. You should get a say in who you fight next and when you want to fight. I think you've earned it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like those things are out of my control. I mean, like last year, I was getting a lot of credit from the media and fans for stepping up and willing to fight people publicly and that kind of thing. Or not necessarily fighting publicly, but like go out publicly and say I'm willing to fight these different guys. But those fights never panned out. And I end up sitting there waiting 2 months, 3 months, 4 months for a fight. And it never really matured to anything. So at this point, realizing that I'm not getting any younger by the days. I'm in my prime right now. I want to make sure I make the most of that and make the best of this opportunity. So if it means I have to fight 3-4 guys before I get that title shot, then I'm willing to do that. The one thing I'm not willing to do is wait around for that perfect ideal matchup. I'm willing to go out there and make the perfect opportunity for myself.
Well, I did see the comments that you said on Saturday that you're still willing with Khamzat, but you know it's got to be kind of like on your terms or your timing or whatever. I remember Dana White, he got asked about him, and he said he's cleared 100%. So I'm sure the fans would love to see that matchup. But, boy, when you threw out Luque as a name as well, heck, man, he's been making some strides. I would love to see that one as well. And, again, going back to what I said earlier, welterweight division is stacked. Make sure it's one of them top-ranked names like you, and sign us up with fans, too. We got to get them fans going. I think a lot of you guys have already done your dues and fought, you know, without the fans, but I think you guys all deserve the fans as well. I mean, hopefully you're one of those that is looking forward to fighting in front of the fans. I know some say it doesn't matter to them at all. Can you tell us where you stand? Is that what you want?
So yeah, I definitely miss the fans. Like, the fans give you a different type of energy altogether. It's really hard to get yourself super amped up and make that fight like that much more exciting, where you're not getting that immediate like satisfaction for a big shot, a big takedown, or anything impressive that you do in the fight. It's like, yeah, you just land this impressive takedown or this like crazy jump kick, and then like you hear dead silence. It's like, oh well, maybe it wasn't that great. So you're not really that excited to do it again, so to speak. But when you're throwing those big shots, you land those big takedowns, and the action's going in the fight, and you have the crowd chanting behind you, I feel like that definitely pumps you up and encourages you to go out there and fight harder and do better. So I can't wait for us to fight in front of the fans again.
I mean, think about it. If them gladiators back in the Roman times, if they got into a spat, you know, somewhere away in the fields and no one saw it, it wouldn't be the same as in that glorious Coliseum. Or even think of your high school days. You and some dude get into it, you're walking down an alley, and, you know, you sort them out. All right, cool. You tell your friends about it, but it ain't the same as fighting behind that jack-in-the-box next to the high school. Not everyone's watching, right?
Yeah, 100%, dude. I mean, like I said, like, the energy with the fans there is completely different. And just like it's everything about it is amazing. I mean, I remember being able to fight last March. It was one of the last fights before the world kind of shut down. And after the fight, we're walking back to MGM, and one of the fans just kind of noticed that I was in the crowd walking, and out of nowhere, just like crowd just erupted, like, yeah, Neil Magny. And it was just like this crazy like stream of fans just like yelling and chanting my name and supporting me. And that energy makes you feel appreciated. You definitely enjoy it. So. I can't wait to get back to that. I can't wait to get back to put on the show for the fans and get them fights that they appreciate.
No doubt. Thanks for sharing that story. That's a great story. We live in Vegas, so we know exactly what that's like. It's a fight town, and the fans love gravitating to the fighters pre- and post-fight. But that's very, very cool to hear. And thanks for the time today, man. Again, great fight against Jeff Neal. Congrats on the win. Congrats on the awesome career you've put together, we've noticed. And hopefully you get these fights that you want, and you can make a nice title run. Okay, I think we lost him, but I think he got the gist of he's a badass. So our connection's a little rough. All right, that's Neil Magny, folks. Thank you to Oren Hodak for lining that up. Congrats against the Neil Magny. He's won 4 of 5. So when you fought almost 30 times, I think you can definitely have a say in what's next. Paid his dues.
He should. He should be able to do that. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you know, Miller and Cerrone goes are on like 37, if I'm not mistaken. They keep passing each other or tying each other, but they've had 37 fights total. Neither one of them was part of the reality show, and I'm throwing in Neil's exhibition fights. Mm-hmm. But I think they still count. I mean, I don't know. I tend to count them, but I guess if not, he's over. I think he's at 26 or something. The next one will be 27. If you count him, he'll be at 30 or whatever.
Do you remember what reality show Cowboy was a part of?
Did he come to support Michelle Watterson when she was on Fight Girls?
I don't know about that.
We'll see him at a live event.
Wasn't he on the Tap Out show? Wasn't he one of those guys?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Dude, how many people don't even know what Tap Out is?
I know. That's crazy. I was, I took a drive.
See a lot less t-shirts, you know, before you could count on seeing maybe a dozen, at least a dozen if you went to a show, but.
I took a drive this weekend towards Saboba Casino, and I was telling Laura about like how back in the day we would go cover events here, and that was a place where the fights, there would be like almost 30 fights in one night, like 25 fights. It was insane. It was super late, but back then CDs were popular. Everybody had a CD player in their car, so we would pass out CDs to people as they were walking out. Go, hey, listen to our show. And it had like the greatest moments of our show. I was still young, but it was about 45 minutes long or something. It had a couple really funny interviews. But yeah, that was at Saboba Casino. And that's where you would see the Top Out crew. They'd be doing the same thing. They'd be selling T-shirts out of the trunk of their car. But you're right, man. Yeah, I haven't seen a Top Out shirt in a while.
It's been a while since I've seen one at all. It's been a while since I've been to an event. But I guess with, you know, them starting things off, we'll probably make it down to a T-Mobile. The last event I went to was at the Palm. So it was I guess it was a fight night. No, you know what it was? It was a tough finale. It was when Macy Chison defeated Pani Kanizad. So it was a tough finale. But on that card, I believe it was RDA versus Usman. So that one wouldn't be fair because it's only like 1,700 that get in. The T-Mobile is like 20,000. I want to go to a show at the T-Mobile, and out of those 20,000, I think I'll see it. I think I'll see 12 Tap Out shirts at least. A dirty.
I think
dozen.
Walmart bought them, right? Didn't Walmart buy like a bunch of those guys all together? And
I don't know, but in the early days, you would see at least 1,000 Tap Out shirts, maybe 500 or 1,000 Affliction shirts, and then throw in everything else that was, you know, around. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of Affliction. I got to give praise to Affliction as well. And then you had Hostility and
not about them.
Silver Star and I guess
Hitman.
Which ones?
Hitman, remember that one?
Hitman, yeah, you'd see a lot of that as well. But those days are gone. I mean, I think the Reebok era took care of that. And then some fashion just went out. Like Affliction went from being cool to now everybody's wearing it. So I guess it was uncool for a while. But I remember even Dana White, I think, wore Affliction jeans or T-shirts or something like that at some point. And then, you know, whatever. That happens to all fashion. But anyway, again, thank you to Neil Magny, first time. Oren Hodek set that up. Go ahead, Ghost. Send Oren a shout out.
Hello, Oren.
All right. Lorenz Larkin's going to join us in just a sec, who, by the way, fought Neil Magny, but he's in a different promotion now. He's at Bellator. He fought at Bellator 158. He fought against Rafael Carvalho. We got a few minutes to fill in here. I don't know if we finished talking about Bellator. Goes, you were right. I did hear you say Pettis was surgical when he beat Archuleta. You know, Archuleta, it's not like he gassed, but he was moving around so much. And a lot of it, I mean, I love feints. I love feints where when it looks like, you know, you might be going for a takedown or grabbing the leg or maybe fainting to throw a strike of some sort. But I feel like he also did a lot that led to nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to be fair, I also felt like he wasn't exhausted at the end. He's just got endless cardio. But Pettis, he just stayed, you know, he was very, very efficient. He kind of led the dance in terms of he always stayed in the middle most of the time. And then he just moved wherever he needed to move. And then if a strike came, you know, he slipped. Or he used his footwork to pivot, and then boom, he would deliver something. And most of the time he was hitting them. He could do it when he was off balance, and he could do it when he was, you know, throwing a full punch, you know, with the thrust, the hips, turning his feet and everything. It was really masterful for young Pettis. And young Pettis deserves praise because he's been in his brother's shadow for such a long time. And I was really glad to see Duke Rufus and Anthony Pettis showing him some love, hugging him and giving him his praise. You know, I thought that was like incredible moment, you know. And then even when he had the belt around him, Anthony was like looking at it, and I thought that was amazing. It was one of my favorite things to see, you know, in this past weekend, was just the happiness that whole team had on Mother's Day. You know, the Pettis brothers, I've always talked about how close they are with the mom. They spoil her with presents. So good for them. Happy for that lot. Archuleta will have to figure things out. You know, he's competed at 45. He's now competed at 35, been a champion at 35. He's only got, what, two losses, I think, three losses, I can't remember. And but he'll have to bounce back from this. But this division's getting interesting because you got Rafion Stotts, a teammate of Pettis, who's like 16-1. And then you got Patrick Mix, who's 14-1. Can't forget about Darren Caldwell if he decides he wants to drop as well. it's one of their better divisions, and not a shocker. Bantamweight is just popping all over the place. Sorry, I started to say something along the way. Let me give a quick plug to Saturday's watch along, UFC 262. Goes and I will be doing a watch along. We'll tell you more about it, but we wanted you to at least pin it to the calendar. Now let's get to our next guest, Lorenz Larkin. He fought this past weekend, defeated former middleweight champion Rafael Carvalho. He fought at middleweight. Then he immediately told us, I ain't doing that shit again. So we'll talk to him about what's next. When we join him, it's going to be Lorenz Larkin. Hang tight. We'll be right back. What up, Lorenz Larkin? How you doing, man?
What's going on?
Not much. Congrats on your win this past Saturday. You made it very clear your middleweight career is over.
Yeah. I'm done with that.
All right. Well, why did the fight even happen then at middleweight? Because you were doing so good as a welterweight, and I've been championing you to be next for Douglas Lima. But as part of the new Bellator rankings panel, I didn't see you available to be ranked. Then you took the middleweight fight, and so now maybe you can answer some of these questions.
Oh, you can't see. It's the light. I got George Garcia on here. This list I got, man. Full panel as it follows. Jeff Kane, Brian Campbell, Rodrigo Del Campo, Rob DeMille. I got them all, and I got you. I was like, whoa, really?
Well, you're not available to be ranked at welterweight.
Okay, but why? The rankings, so...
That's not for us. We just rank who's available to us.
Okay, but this is my thing. If you're on the rankings and you're inactive for a year or over, I understand they take you off. But being that it hasn't even been established yet, they should still establish the rankings and then see if that person is inactive after a year and take them off.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. I agree.
Were these conversations going on when this panel was going on, or were you guys just like, whatever, I mean.
This thing happened this year.
But it doesn't legitimize it. There's a lot of guys that's on there. I'm like, what? I never even – who are
– No, listen. I'm going to tell you something. This is my first – this is the first year they have the rankings. So this is my –
And it's going
year.
Bad.
This is my first year doing it with them. We have a pool of who we can put in the rankings, and when I first turned in my first set of rankings, I was amazed you weren't there. But then when I saw you were taking this middleweight bout, I thought, oh, maybe he's just moving up or whatever. But I've actually thought that you should have been next for Lima. When they did answer, what's his name? Amasov?
Amasov, yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, oh, is Larkin hurt? No, he's taking this fight. Maybe he's moving up. I don't know. I've been confused by all this. And then, of course, Paige gets the win, and now he wants to get in. But I told our writer, Nolan King, who was out there, I go, ask Lorenz if he's coming back to welterweight because he's got a legitimate claim on fighting for that title.
Yeah, man. At this point, it's just like, whatever now. I took this fight because it was exciting. And, the original fight was exciting to me, and that's what got me intrigued about, you know, taking the fight at 85. So then I was just like, you know, okay, cool. We'll take this fight. Costello is a real good formidable opponent. He's real good at 85. He brings it. It'll be an exciting fight. And for this card, you know, it's just like I was just trying to, you know, get something exciting to put on this card because this card was already like one of the best Bellator cards so far. So, you know, once when he fell out, a couple names got thrown my way, and then Rafael got thrown my way. So, you know, me and my camp, we talked just for a quick second, and we're like, dude, like I told him, you know, I was just like, you know what, F it, dude. Oh, I don't even know if you can cuss on here, but yeah, I was just like, F it, you know, like, let's do it. Why not? Like, that's why I do this, not to play the safe game. I haven't played the safe game my whole damn career.
Hell no. I remember when you fought as a light heavyweight. So, yeah, you definitely haven't played the safe game, and you can cuss.
Okay.
And guess what? I can play that game too. See this? This is the Junkie app. And on the Junkie app, we rank all the fighters from all the promotions. And you have been a member of the welterweight rankings for a long time. So whether you're in Bellator, UFC, ONE Championship, PFL, we always rank the best welterweights. And like I say, you've been in them rankings for a long time because you've got a lot of credible wins. Masvidal Magni come right up to you know, to the top of my dome here.
I'm just giving you shit because Nolan showed me the email because I tell you the truth, this was my plan. The only people that I talked to that were on this panel that talked to me was MMA Junkie and then what was the other guy? Was the I don't know if it was Jason or I forgot the other guy, but there's only two people out. And then
let's just call him Clarence.
Yeah, there's only three people, but my whole plan was, I was like, okay, I was telling my coach, I was like, everybody that fucking is on this list, I'm not giving them shit. Like, don't fucking talk to me. So I will say Nolan King showed me the email of him writing whoever the company is that runs it and was saying, you know, why I wasn't on the list and making a claim like, you know, why isn't he on the list? But the other guy from Showtime, he does the Showtime. I gave him shit and he backpedaled. Well, pussy. And then the other guy that was after my fight, him too, I gave him shit. But all the other ones stayed quiet. They kind of seen what I was going with it because everybody that asked me a question, I was like, where are you from and what's your name? And then I'll answer the question.
That's cool that you're giving Nolan King a shout out there. You're wearing a hat.
Oh, yeah, always, man. You know?
You know what? I'm actually in Paris, and I know you're in Riverside, so I would have easily like have talked, you know, to you about this. I want what are some of the gyms that you're training at? I want to drop in one day and check out your training unless it's private.
No. Oh, for you, you're good. Now I seen the email, so you're good. No, but just millennia. I went down to I did a little venture and went down to Gamebred and trained with a couple of those guys two times this camp. So it was good. But mostly it's always at Millennia.
Where's Gamebred at?
In Chula Vista, I want to say. Yeah.
And then the Millennia, I've seen one off of before McKinley.
Yeah. No. That's just kind of like a franchise.
Oh, okay. Where's the true Millennia? Is that in Rancho Cucamonga?
Yeah, Rancho. That's the like HQ, and then there's another like the sister Millennia is in Chino, but the main Millennia is in Rancho.
Yeah, all right. I'm gonna try to do a drop in. Yeah, but no. We know exactly where you rank amongst the top 170ers in the world. And do you know, you saw Scott Coker say it looks like it might be Paige. So do you just wait out the winner at this point? You know, or do you want to? I think one time you told us, I fight best when I fight a lot, right?
Yeah, and I keep saying it year after year after year, and I just still end up fighting like two times a year. So hopefully I'm going to try to get something before August. So we'll see, you know, but that's the plan. Get something before August and then look towards the end of the year.
Would you want to be on the same card as the champ just because sometimes you can serve as insurance? But you're on the same timeline, man, and it's no longer this whole, like, you know, I don't know. I feel like there's always a bigger spotlight on a division when all the fighters that are big names can fight on the same fight card. I'll give you an example. You got Pettis defeating Archuleta. So obviously the UFC has the option of doing, running it back with Archuleta, but then you got Mix. You got Stotts, you know, same division. So you want to comment on that, on your friend there? Or?
That's my girl's sister.
Okay.
So if anybody's like, that's not his girl, he got caught. that's my girl's sister.
Okay.
I don't know, man. It really, at this point, it doesn't matter. It just keep me active at this point. I tried to leave it up to rankings, but they failed me, so now it's just time to fight and just keep fighting. That's my main goal, just stay active.
We were listening that day, and it made so much sense. You said, when I look back on my career, I noticed that when I was fighting my best, because Goz usually asks these questions like, when do you feel like you were the best, Lorenz Larkin? And I remember you saying it was when I was fighting frequently, and ever since that, I've kept that with me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think fighting frequently is good, especially if you can do it in spells. I mean, obviously there's times when you have to rest a little bit, But and that's why I'm also I'm a believer in ring rust. I know there's some fighters that say it don't exist, but I think it has to exist a little bit.
Yeah, for sure it exists. It's just running through the whole motion. Like I hate when some fighters be lying out their ass just trying to look cool and all this other shit. It's just like we get butterflies. You still get butterflies. You still get nervous. You know, the ring rust is a true thing. You know what I mean? It's just the only thing that's different with guys that perform at the top level is you still get butterflies and you still get nervous, but you've done it so many times that it becomes a natural feeling. And you're just like, okay, like I only get this feeling one this time happens. So you deal with it better. Other than like when they say somebody's first fight in the big show and then they get that, those jitters, they don't know how to deal with it. So they overcompensate, they come out really hard and then maybe, you know, lose a lot of steam towards the end. So when fighters say that shit, I hate it, man. I'm just like, stop trying to be cool. Like everybody gets butterflies and everybody gets nervous. It's just, we deal the top guys and the guys who come in our game, just deal with it better. They know how to deal with it. They know how to, it's just a more natural thing that they know how to deal with.
I'm glad you said that, man. Who am I to say that to you guys? But I've just always thought, isn't it human nature if you haven't done something for a while, it takes you a little bit to get right back into it, right?
Yeah, it's just everything. You know, you just – I mean, I had, what, was it about 15 months? So as the motions come, everything starts coming back to you. You know what I mean? But, yeah, it's a true thing, yeah.
In those 15 months, were you able to solve time travel? Was that the flux capacitor over there behind you? What the hell is that thing?
Oh, that's not that's my PC.
That's your PC?
Yeah.
Damn.
Holy crap.
Hey, messing around.
I don't know if you can see it. There you go.
Look at that.
What in the world is...
I got to play my games, man.
Damn. Well, hey, I was going to ask, I heard you talk a little bit about middleweight and just the things that were just different and hitting him with everything you got and him still coming forward. But was there any kind of scenario where if things went exactly the way you wanted, everything played out perfectly, would you have even contemplated, like, was that decision already made before the fight that middleweight would never, ever, ever be an option ever again?
No. Even if I came through and plowed to that guy, it would have just been, I probably would have been like to the D-ranking fucker. But no, other than that, no, it was just my thing is, man, is I'm coming to the end of my career and it's like, I always just want to look back and be happy with the things I've done, not what I've been steered to do and things that I've wanted to do and test myself and make exciting things happen. So, you know, this was just a fight that I was just like, why not? You know, like it's to me, it's fun when guys, you know, go up and make a fight happen. You know what I mean? It's a lot of guys play shit safe and it's cool. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, that's your career. Cool. Play it, you know, but I don't want to do that shit. Like, I don't want to do that shit. If a fun fight and it makes sense, then I'm more than likely going to be like, all right, let's do it.
The taking chances in life and all that, has that been something that you've just kind of always done, even outside of mixed martial arts, has just kind of been that guy that's not afraid to take a risk in life?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Other than food. I'm really picky with food. So if I haven't tried it yet, I'm not trying that shit. Or I'm not doing nothing stupid like skydiving. But other things, yeah, you know, I try not to have, like, no regrets. You know, so... You know, anything that I want to do, I'm 9 out of 10 times I'm going to do.
Last question for me, and I'm hoping you're going to back me up on this. Remember on that Air Force base when we were looking at that plane, do you remember how cold it was? And was that not, at least in your top 5 ever, the coldest you've ever been? Do you remember? Because here's what I remember about you. I remember you were so cold. I was freezing too. That you walked backwards because the wind was hitting us hard.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Because I've told that story before, and people go, "I couldn't have been that cold."
No, I was pretty cold. That was when they didn't want us taking no pictures or nothing, right? Of the airplane. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, it was pretty cold, but I think my coldest was Boston when I fought in Boston, and the other promotion ends with a C. But yeah, I fought Howard, and we're downtown. There's like this corridor, and it's just like the wind. Like once in the like we. Me and my whole team, you know, we came from Cali, so it was just like I had some joggers on, like some sweats, a little windbreaker, and then the bellman opened the door, and all this wind came in, and we went right back to the elevator, went upstairs, and tried to change and layer up. It was the cold. That was cold, but it was cold out there too. I think it was more so the wind chill out in Virginia.
By the way, you strike me as somebody who would be fun on fight night to watch fight with, because you were saying, oh, man, you know, when fighters say this, it pisses you off. Can you give me an example of a fighter that keeps it real, that you seem to be on the wavelength? Maybe someone you've never met, someone that lives on the other part of the world or the other part of the United States, where you just go, you know, that guy and I think alike.
You know what, man? I truthfully don't. I don't know, because I don't really watch, like, interviews or anything like that, or, like, or even like press conferences to even like really hear the guys.
Yeah.
The only thing that stands out, and it's like such a long time ago, was John Jones. Like for the longest, I literally hated him. I always just was like, dude, this guy is so fucking fake. Like so fucking fake. And I respect him as a fighter, but I was like, dude, there's something about like, you know what it is I don't trust really nice people, like really, really, really nice people that just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you understand me, but overly nice people I don't trust and I don't want to be around. And I was just like, dude, but when Cormier come around, dude, and he like kind of just like, it kind of seemed like he just like, was just like, and just let himself go. I fucking love John Jones. I fucking love John Jones, especially when he was like, hey, you still there, pussy? Oh, dude, I was just like a little fanboy. Now John Jones, like the realest, I love him. He is like the best. Wow, but before weird. Then, God, I do. I was just like, dude, I hope you trip and sprain your ankle before you fight. Like, I did not like that guy, dude. It was just,
I got to peel back the curtain. If you guys only knew just how nice Lorenz Larkin really is, like when we talk to him in person, hearing these things catch me off guard, but it's kind of cool. Because we're all like that. We all kind of like, ah, that guy or that gal or whatever. We're all like that. But Lorenz usually just stays to himself. So that was an interesting story, because I asked you someone that you liked, and then all of a sudden you were like, this is someone I hate. I'm like, oh, this is going in the wrong direction. But then it came full circle. Now you're a big fan. So that was an interesting story.
Sorry. Yeah, I just maybe because it's just, you know, when he fights, there's always like all these commentary before, you know what I mean? But, you know, some of the other guys, they're just like right to the fight. So I don't know. But yeah, I don't.
So are we better off like mixing in a couple insults here and there so that we don't come off as too nice? That way you'll trust us?
No, you guys are good. You like, I'm talking about, you know what I mean, man. Like,
you split me off like 4 minutes ago.
Well, your name was on the list, dude. That one hurt because I didn't know none of these other guys. I don't know none of these other guys. And I was like,
you don't ask questions when you're at belts or like, yo, what's up? You immediately went, there's the journalist. Fuck them. Like, I mean,
no, because I
really,
went,
really, what Nolan was talking about is the service that's the, well, you know, the outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think are called Combat Rankings. I should give them a plug. That do this. I think they have a really interesting platform and module, and I've had conversations with the owner. I actually know Chris because I'm a longtime UG member, and he is part of the UG. But I think more of the problem is that Bellator doesn't make the fighter available to be ranked. He's only doing his job by providing the list he was given, but I think it's on Bellator to provide the names on who can be ranked and who can't.
I'm going to tell you what's going on Bellator. I seen Bellator before I even fought, like I want to say maybe a month before I fought. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is this? And he was like, it is all on the list of people. We got nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. And I was like, okay. So they put it all on that panel.
Was that Coker? Or who was this that did that?
That was Choi.
Oh, he's gone. Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm telling you exactly how it is, how I think it is, and I guess maybe we'll see. We'll see. One thing's for sure, I think you're going to fight for a title sometime in 2021. It was great to see you back out there doing your thing. Much respect, because you've done it at light heavyweight, middleweight, and welterweight. You've done it really, really well. And heavyweight. Yeah, four divisions. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the time, Lorenz, as always.
Appreciate it, guys.
We'll talk to you soon, all right, bro?
All right. Peace out, Junkie Nation.
All right, we'll see you later. All right, there you have it, folks. Lorenz Larkin. It's always a fun time with that guy. Glad he was booked. Good job to you and the Bellator team for getting us there. But really, I mean, not to put anyone on blast, I, along with two junkies, are on the Bellator panel. We rank who's available to us. And that's something that stood out to me. And our work stands for itself, because you'll see him on the USA Today and MMA Junkie rankings. But at the same time, the outfit, I want to get their name right. Allow me to turn this on. You might hear the male noise. His name's Chris Palmquist. And I've known him for a long time through the UG. He's a good guy. In fact, I think he was really, really close with Joe Lauzon in terms of running his career and things like that. So he's an OG himself. It's called Combat Registry. That's what it's called. They, I believe, go by the names that are available to them from Bellator. I think if Lorenz had explored that conversation longer with Rich Chu, he would have seen, because Chu was probably right. Hey, they ranked them, we're out. He's probably right about that. But if there would have been a follow-up question, like we were all there, we would have said, whoa. But why isn't Larkin on the list? That's the question. You know what I mean? Is it because he took that middleweight bout? I don't agree with that, because his resume is a welterweight resume. He's taken this bout, but why is he taking the bout? I don't know, because, like I say, I thought he earned the shot. But whatever. It's going to sound like I'm homering too much. So, listen, we'll be back on Thursday to finish up, you know, what happened with the UFC. Marina Rodriguez did defeat Michelle Waterson. Huge, huge win for her. Both ladies really put on the show. Gregor Gillespie is back. Neil Magny, a guest of ours, he looked great as well. So there's lots to talk about. Well, we're out of time. But Saturday, don't forget, pin it down on the calendar. We will be hosting a UFC 262 watch-along. All the information will be available on MMA Junkie, and we'll tell you all the details on Thursday. We'll finish recapping all of the cards as well. Look out for our spinning back click series that we do. You check it out. It's been getting more numbers. So please share it and tweet it when you see it. And all of our interviews are available on youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, Goz and I are out of here. Enjoy your Monday, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Until then, go out there and be a champion.